I'm prepared to stay on, and I'm hoping that there will be a resolution and that I'll be teaching class in the near future, like Cúna Dé. The reasons I'm prepared to stay are that, in the first place, this is the job I was lawfully given. I'm entitled to be here. I applied by open competition for the position of principal teacher of recess when it was advertised in the papers. I was selected by a board of interviewees. I was the first choice of the members of that board. And I presented them with my letter of application, my qualifications and inspector's reports. They knew of my years and experience as a teacher. And I have every right to be here. I presented my work for on-the-spot checks by department officials at regular intervals. I feel entitled to my wages. I'm given the job and nobody has any right to get rid of me. I'm entitled to be paid here. I should be teaching. I'm willing to teach. I'm in every day to teach if anyone is sent in to me. I'm prepared to do it. It's what I want to do. It's not my fault that there are no children in the class.
It certainly is significant that all of the parents in an area would be willing to band together and would be willing to take such a strong stand as keeping their pupils away from school, employing a teacher for a period of time until the Department of Education employs somebody else in the interim while the dispute is still in progress. That is a very significant step. I think it's one that has to be looked upon, and one that certainly would suggest that people feel very, very, very strongly about something or other.
Mórtín O'Cahoin of Radio na Gaeltachta, who has reported since the beginning on the remarkable situation in Recess National School in Connemara. At present, there are three teachers in a two-teacher school. One of the teachers, the principal, Breed Ní Gonail, sits in an empty classroom every day because the parents in the area refuse to allow her to teach their children. In fact, up to this year, they paid a private teacher rather than avail of the free teacher provided by the Department of Education in the person of Breed Ní Gonail. From the outset, the whole dispute involved drama, passions and so many fundamental issues. The rights of a teacher, the rights of parents, the rights of children to an education, the Irish language and the role of the clergy in a rural community. There was, from the very beginning, no agreement on even what the row was about.
Well, when I came into the diocese and took a look at the recess controversy, it seemed to me to be like a mosaic gone wrong or a fisherman's tangle. But there were two discernible strands, at least. One was the liturgical and the other the educational. One was about the mass and the other was about the school. So I decided to try and tackle the liturgical one first because I have direct responsibility for that. So with the cooperation of the clergy in the parish, I sent a priest specially to the parish, not to a neighbouring parish, as has been said, but specially to the parish, to provide a mass in Irish and to provide a full pastoral service in Irish. And I did that because I believe in it. I believe in it strongly. I wanted to give the people a choice. I wanted to make the Mass available to the Gaelic-speaking population, and I wanted to be as supportive as possible of our Gaelic language and culture. Now, that was the liturgical issue out of the way, but it wasn't the main issue, it seems to me. It has never been the main issue. The main issue is educational, and it's between the parents and the teacher. And I found it a sad situation, really. Sad for the parents because they were locked into controversy. Sad for the children because they were growing up in the shadow of controversy. Sad for the other teachers because inevitably they were affected by the tension. And very sad altogether for the principal who found herself and still finds herself in the school on her own in an empty classroom. And a classroom should be a place of colluder, a place of learning, instead of a place of isolation. So it was very sad for them all.
Breed Ní Gonail claimed that it was because she criticised the local priest who wouldn't or couldn't say Mass in Irish in Bun na Grúch. Indeed, in a letter to her in July 1986, the school manager referred, and I quote, to her interference in the liturgical affairs of the parish and the consequent discussion among a group of parishioners in the question of the Mass and Deira Varida, because of the bad example thereby given to the pupils of recess school and of the majority of the parishioners, I shall request the department to terminate your principalship of recess national school if there's any further statements given by you on the above matters to the press, radio or TV. Unquote. The parents and the curate in question, Father O'Gorman, said that it had nothing to do with the Mass. It was all to do with their view of her as a teacher. Passions were running very high on a Liveline programme in January 87.
Well, since my child left the school and went to another school, she had to leave home at the age of 10 and stay with her grandparents. And I feel now my child is getting an education, so I have now proved to myself that it was lack of education by the teacher.
I have to cut across you there because, I mean, opinion.
But I think that we should get time. We were promised this time by a phone call this morning.
Yes, of course I'm going to give you time and of course you're going to get your point of view. But you cannot question the competence of a teacher on the public airwaves.
I'm not questioning it.
I have to say to you that you cannot make allegations about somebody's competence on the airwaves without evidence. There is absolutely no evidence to substantiate that and we can't...
evidence.
Well, if you have evidence, that's fine, show evidence. But there is no way that we can allow allegations.
Recess itself is a small rural parish, not really even a parish. The recess area is in the Roundstone parish, which comprises the areas of Cashel, Recess and Roundstone. Recess itself is an area comprising a great deal of mountain and mountain land, made up of... a good number of small farmers, small even by West of Ireland standards, in that the farms are very small in Connemara. And you would have quite a number of people there who would be into sheep farming on the mountains, that live at the foot of the Twelve Bends. It's on the main Galway Clifton Road. It's about 37 miles from Galway. It's a very scenic area, but it's also an area which has been hard hit economically. And there's not very much, there's no industry really there at the moment, apart from a few individuals who do their best to operate very limited as regards the workforce anyhow, craft operations and that sort of thing. So Recess is, if one would use the terminology, a run-up-the-mill, small rural area with a shop, two pubs, a guard station with one guard there. The doctor comes once or twice a week. There's a local health centre, that kind of thing. It's certainly an area which I think would feel threatened in the 1980s, and the population has been dwindling there, as it has been in many West of Ireland rural areas.
Mactara show you, Mr. Stervel Gom, Argus.
More
show you, more. Stervel. Was talk where you really didn't try the year, was it? Ach, we, the taboo war of the Mailed in Chinese Morati, spoke about Gasha, who we guarded, would grill your knowledge. I was tan Verla. Tan Berla di anna lan frwb ysdach. Ta Berla yn llasalach. Siawe yn otyn sydd wedi bod yn bwna crwcwyr. Wyl tŵn ys. Berla i ddig ta'r llasalach ysdach an frwb er yng Ngweildi o'n Merla o'r sas. Si ddi ar yng Ngweildi frwb ymach. Dam na Berla.
I feel sorry for her. The way they're acting with her. She's respectable. And she's a good teacher. And she leaves here in the morning very early on her bicycle down to recess and looks after her work in her class there without any scholars. She's in an empty classroom.
It's on the borderline between the Gaeltacht, that is the English-speaking area of Connemara, and the Irish-speaking area. And some part of it is officially designated as Gaeltacht as per the Act of the 1950s. So the Gaeltacht, the dividing line between the Gaeltacht and the Gaeltacht, that is the English and Irish speaking areas, would intertwine in all sorts of ways through townlands, that kind of thing. One house would be outside of the Gaeltacht, another house 20 yards possibly would be inside the Gaeltacht. But I think the main Gaeltacht area there is Bunnacrook, that is the area right beneath the Twelve Bends, the Bunnacrook area where Breedney Conan actually lives.
We're here in Bunnacnock. Across from us we have the 12 pins, 12 bins, or Banabiola, still with traces of snow stuck in the fissures of the rock, high in the crevices of the hill. That's a very unique mountain range, very distinctive, very beautiful, well known to all visitors in Connemara and seen for many miles all round in the Connemara hinterland. To the north, we have the Mam Turk Range, more rounded and smooth in outline, but indeed very stately. And one might say of that mountain range, as Kavanagh said, that Lot's wife would not be salt if she had remained as steadfast as my hills that face eternally north towards Dúshöga in this case. We have flat bogland and mountain across from us, and indeed it's an area, landscape of hill and lake and bogland. Very beautiful, typical Connemara scenery, remote and wild and unspoilt in its natural beauty. Just now I'm ready to go to school. I have my bicycle rigged up and I'm ready to go the downhill drive towards Rosses, to be in there to open up and be in ahead of the children and the other teachers. I'm there to do my duty, to do my work for my country. At the moment, my duty to my country is to defend the rights of the people of this country in their own location, in their own place of work. Everyone has the right to be at one's lawful place of work. Everyone has the right to justice, to truth, to freedom, and to live free from harassment. And indeed, I'm defending teachers and any worker from unfair dismissal. So I'm there to take my position in the school as principal teacher there and carry out my duties during the day, mark the roll, register the number of children that are present in school. While the assistant teachers will mark the roll in their classrooms, I register the number present, supervise the children during the day, give them general instructions if necessary, and perform any duties that's possible. But for the main part of the day, I'll be in an empty classroom. Nevertheless, it's a fine day, and that's what I have to do. Slán machines, good idea of it.
She's here now about eight, nine years. Got on very well with her. I've often talked to her and everything and found her very good now. I couldn't find anything wrong with her at all. She seems to have a bit of trouble up in the school now at the moment. But she seems to be singled out, you know, which isn't right, and, you know, it's not right at all. Even people that hadn't any children going to the school, they wouldn't even look at her, let alone talk to her. And that's a fact, you know, they wouldn't. You'd notice them around the place, like. And the fella says, when you live in the place, you know people. And but by God, they sure changed over this. They singled her out anyway. But, I think God is on her side, and she'll pull through it all right. When the tough gets going, when the going gets tough, the tough get going.
If there is a typical national school teacher, Breed Ní Gonail is not it. Her view of the world is fixed. Right and wrong are very clear to her. To her enemies, she's an Irish language fanatic. To her admirers, she's a strong, determined woman defending a principle. To former colleagues in Carysfort, where she trained to be a teacher, she was described to me as something of an anachronism at that time.
I grew up at the foot of the Reeg. I was reared on a 10-acre farm on the shores of Clew Bay. And I must say that I have very happy memories of childhood and of my parents and family and all the good neighbours in the locality. It was a great place and I got a great start early in life. That's for certain. It's grand to recall young days there, going in and out with my father round about the land. And a very happy man he was to be with, both for us children and for the people who knew him. I remember being with him when he was bringing cats to turf home from the bog, and he'd sing. He was a very good singer and a flute player. And those two things were important to him. There was a lot of music in the area. There was great friendliness among the people, a great sense of sharing. They shared the black pudding, the homemade black pudding that they made. They kept pigs when I was small and going to school. They don't any longer. They shared the homemade black pudding with each other and the brown cake at Christmas. The beastons, if you know how that is. There's fresh milk when the cow calves. and of course all the special treats that they had. You may say they shared life, they shared their joys and sorrows. They talked together across the ditches and at the gates and after mess. And the women came in and talked and the men were out working in the fields and everyone knew everybody else, wished everyone well and helped one another along. There was a helping hand and everyone pushed the barrow for somebody else as far as they could. They worked together, shared work, the reeking of hay, shared work at turf, working at turf in the bog, filling trailers of turf maybe or something of that sort. When haymaking was going on, help was always needed, especially at the reeking. Silage wasn't in use in those days. So they worked together, they danced together, they went to mass together. They had plenty of enjoyment, got plenty of enjoyment out of life. There was great happiness, a great sense of the enjoyment that could be got from life. It's grand to recall it, and I think very much of the music that was in the area. I remember on Sundays after the dinner, between 3 o'clock and the due time of the evening at 6 and 7, out around about the house, we used to hear two melodeon players who lived about a mile from us playing and tuning up their melodeons and rattling into beautiful music. They were excellent musicians. The two played together regularly, both indoors and out of doors, but there's something special about music that drifts on the air on a summer's day to one in the distance. And I think it's extra nice a little bit away from it. This was lovely to hear, and we knew, we lived close to them, we knew exactly where they'd be sitting. They'd be sitting at the gate playing together, and it was beautiful to hear them stopping and starting off again at the start of the music, tuning up together and getting going again into another burst of reels. The open space has always meant a lot for me, one of the reasons that I came back to Connemara. But I think I have a lot to be thankful for, and I do thank God for the people I knew when I was growing up. Both my parents, who were both cheerful and hearty and happy, and who hadn't a lot of the riches of the world, but had enough to keep going and were satisfied with what they had and had an awful lot of joy in their lives and loyalty, of course, to each other. And the same was true of the neighbours among them. And there was a great closeness, great close contact and frequent visiting at night. I talked about things they shared. They shared Micheál O'Hare with one another. They shared the radio, the old battery radio people gathered in. Maybe there was only one in the village at that time in the beginning, before radios became common. Those things remain in one's mind. When I was teaching in the Navan Road, they were doing a play. The children were doing a play, a Christmas concert. And it happened that it was shortly after my father's sudden death. He died of a heart ailment suddenly. But he had at that time, he'd reached about the age of 70 and had lived a very good and healthy life. And even though it was a terrible shock, it was better than to find him slackening and fading away and being confined to inside life of any kind. He was a farmer, an outgoing man, and just loved the world, loved life, loved being out. And the only time he was indoors was on a wet day. If it was too wet to work outside, he'd be inside then and he'd be reading or doing something. Before Christmas, the school was running a concert just for the children and for the teachers. We were all gathered in the hall. One class, I think there would be about fifth class, were performing a mummer's play. They were doing the Wren Boys, as we call them in Mayo. And they came and rhymed off their various well-known rhymes, and then they began to dance a set. And I was very touched by the thing, very, very moved, because it brought an awful lot of the life that I had known and the way of life that I had known in the west of Ireland back to me. And it was very striking, the innocence of them. They were very young, about 10, I suppose, some of them maybe even younger than that. The girls it was a girls' school, and the girls were doing the boys' part. They were dancing as men. Maria, the girls were dressed up as men and the other girls were dressed as women. And I was very struck by the innocence of it. The girls with their hands around the other girls' waists, dancing around in the set, keeping the time to the music. And I just as I sat among them, there'd be about 800 girls in the hall watching the performance, and the others were on stage just giving us a flesh, really, of life as it had been and as I had known it. And as I sat there, I just thought of my mother so far away from those 800. She was dying of cancer at the time, and it was very close to my father's death. She survived him only by a year. And she didn't survive him in health, really, for any length of time, because she became ill. The ailment hit her very, very shortly after my father's death, unfortunately. And I was thinking of her at home in the west of Ireland, so far away from the noisy hall of the excited children and this performance that meant so much to all in the school. And she was away in a quiet house and in her own room, curtained off and darkened off, I would say. I was just thinking of her there and laden with disease, waiting, literally waiting to die. And this set dance on the stage and the Wren boys brought the whole life. As I'd say, my father and mother had probably met at a set dance session, maybe as he played, or very, very likely that's how they'd first met. It just brought all of their life before me. It seemed to move before me on the stage completely. Well, I arrive at the school at about 9 in the morning, a little before times, and put on the heat. We haven't a caretaker in the school, so I do that job. Open up and get the roll books ready, take them into the classrooms to the other teachers. And when school time comes around, I let the children in. The teachers arrive then and take over for the day. We greet each other just inside the doorway, and they go into their classes and teach for the day. And we meet again during the breaks. I supervise the children in the yard at all breaks because I like to have some contact with the children and because I like to be out in the fresh air and out from the empty classroom as well. The rest of the time is spent registering the number present in school and giving directions to the children if need arises or if forms come that have to be filled, general instructions to the children maybe on safety or something like that, or if there's something special happening that I feel I ought to talk to them about. I go into the classrooms and spend a while with the children. I like that contact with them. And the rest of the day then is up to me to fill in. It's time on my own hands. I fill it in by writing and reading mainly. A lot of people are in touch with me. I have a support committee that are working for me in Dublin, and I'm in constant contact with them, in contact with the INTO, in contact with the Department of Education from time to time. And with the various people that are offering me help, sometimes people travel long distances to visit me to see can they do anything to help. And following visits like that, I always write back. Those kind of things take time, and in spare time then I read literature and history mainly. Yeah. All kinds of poetry, anything that I haven't yet come across. Any kind of poetry I lay hands on, I enjoy reading that. I enjoy reading anything about nature. The surroundings that we are now in, and in the area that I live in Bunnagnook, there's an awful lot of stimulation for the mind just from the topography alone. The hills around us, the Banabiola and the Mam Turks, are, according to environmentalists and geologists, 360 million years old. The hills were formed in the Caledonian era, and the rock is quartzite, which is crystallized sandstone. Even before that 360 million years, there was already rock there. That type of thing is gives one a massive time scale to think about when you look out your window and see that landscape all around you. Even to look at the hills, they go up the stairs.
I think, in fairness, there have been a number of personality clashes and local clashes, which you will get in a small rural area, the sort of area which we've described as recess is. Now, the point being made about the Irish language being the root cause of the dispute is true possibly to some extent, but I certainly wouldn't overestimate it. I think that certain people being strongly in favour, whatever exactly that means, of the Irish language and its promotion, and other people being strongly against the Irish language and its use, is not really the true scenario. I believe that this dispute has grown to an extent that people in the area would never have expected in the initial stages of the various debates about Irish maths, is Irish being taught in the school and that sort of thing. And I think it went out of control to a very considerable degree, because it may not have been handled as well as it could have been handled by different people. And I think it's rather difficult to pinpoint an exact reason or to blame somebody. I think a lot of people possibly could take some blame about the about the situation reaching the crisis point which it has now reached. And I think the matter of the language itself is only another part of it. It's a matter of a big local clash about a big issue with a lot of people, an issue not so big with other people, and it's having got much bigger than it might have seemed at the beginning.
The school manager and the local curate have done everything possible to cooperate with me in the search for reconciliation since I became bishop in this diocese. Everything possible to work with me towards reconciliation and towards the solution of this dispute. I have found them very, very cooperative. The Irish Mass is out of the way. It has been out of the way for several months, and yet when I went there the other night to talk to the parents, there was still a problem. And I found that they were united, or seemed to me certainly to be united, in their determination not to send back their children to Bríeginí Gonal's classroom, even though I did talk to them about the importance of bringing their faith to bear on the situation and taking their faith into account, and the importance of reconciliation and unity and cooperation within the parish, that the kind of situation that obtains there is a countersign to community and a countersign to Christianity. But obviously they are very concerned about their children, and they would feel that they are taking the Christian considerations into mind, and that the paramount consideration for them has to be their children. So they're doing it out of the conviction that they're doing the best thing for their children. That's their conviction. I wish indeed that Solomon hadn't died. He'd be very useful, because it's not easy to find a solution. But I'll continue to work with everybody concerned, with all the interests concerned, to try and find a solution. Because whatever the merits of the argument, as I said, you know, the present situation is a countersign to community, and I would like to try and resolve it, or to make my contribution anyway.
The most complaint I have is that a third teacher was appointed there. I think that it's totally against union principles to have another member of the union carrying out my work in the school, teaching, doing the teaching duties at least. I am principal teacher there. But the fact that she was appointed there copper fastened the boycott, as far as I was concerned. They can bypass me. They have a teacher alternative to me. And as long as they have, and as long as she's paid, it costs them nothing. So they can all send the children in. And I can understand the people who would like their children to be in my class, but they don't want to separate them from their friends. That causes divisions, and the area is so sparsely populated that the few children that are in it would need to be all friendly with each other. And it's bad to divide a class. I don't think a class should be divided.
From the outset, the attitude of the INTO was this, that that we wanted to protect the jobs of all the teachers in the school. We were also grievously concerned that an unqualified teacher had been brought into the school, and that the children who would normally be taught by Bríeginí Gonal were put into a room and being taught by an unqualified teacher. Well, of course, we also wanted from the outset to resolve the problem and simply have recess school operating as it should operate, with two full-time teachers in it. So we have tried from the very start to try and resolve the problem. It did come to the point where the unqualified teacher last year was put out of the school, and a third teacher was appointed on a temporary capacity. And that has at least done one thing. It has now brought the school back under the rules and of the Department of Education, so that now the school is being managed and being run as per the rules of the Department of Education, the rules that the department set down for national schools.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not involved in the controversy, or I don't intend to get involved, but my role is to come in at 9 o'clock, start teaching at 9:30, and finish at 3, teach the children to the best of my ability. I attend every day. I teach Irish up to 11. I use Cáint na Fhoirmiúil in the class all the time, and that's the same as any other teacher in any other school is using. And as far as I'm concerned, this is just a job.
I'm a teacher myself, and a union representative. It is the function of the Department of Education to judge as to whether I continue to be competent or not to do my teaching job. And that is the situation with regard to Breed Nigón and with every other teacher in this country. It is not part of my role as an executive member of the INTO to make judgments on the competence of teachers. That's an area which is covered by the Department of Education. So therefore, I cannot be in the business of offering views as to the competence of the members of my union, the INTO.
Naturally, one cannot go beyond the document which is available and which has been publicly noted from the Department of Education about Breed Nigón's ability and proficiency as a teacher. They have said, and they've given their official stamp, that she is well able to do her job. Now, there have been a discussion and insinuation and other matters talked about the actual standards of teaching and that sort of thing in the recess school. But again, in rural areas, I think that a number of people at times who are possibly more articulate than other people can have bearing on situations that is more significant than their numbers would suggest. But I do believe also that suggestions would be made that people would be breaking away from the solidity of the parents if they allowed their children to go back to school. Two parents did at one stage, and the children were again withdrawn because there were suggestions that the pupils were taunted at school and that it was unbearable for them to continue as they were, and that pressure was brought to bear upon them. While it is very significant that all the parents would be so solidly moulded, again, I think one has to assess the other factor of, pressure being brought to bear in a small community. Breed Nigón is a person who believes very much in the Irish language, in its promotion and in its preservation. And she's also very much aware of our Irish heritage. She's a person who very honestly believes that we have a great duty to promote the language, and that it would be a tremendous disaster, you know, if the language were allowed to die in areas such as recess. I think her viewpoints, you know, don't go down that well with other people. I think that a lot of people feel that she pushes it too strongly. And in fairness, a lot of people don't make a big issue of languages. They speak either Irish, English, whatever the hell it is, and it's not a big issue with them. I think possibly that she has underestimated that simple practical fact that a lot of people don't find these sort of things big issues. They want their pupils to, or their children to, have a good education, which will prepare them for life, possibly and probably overseas, as happens in rural areas like recess. And I would honestly feel, with all respect to Breed, that possibly had other methods, if you like, been used, had a more diplomatic sort of situation arisen between parents management and teachers, that the situation mightn't now be at the crisis point at which it is.
I went to recess in the spring of 87 to meet the parents. All except two sets of parents were united in their opposition to Breed Nigónal. It was clear from talking to them that no matter what their reasons, there was no way they would budge or change their minds on the question of Breed teaching their children. At this stage, I felt that the matter had got personal. They were very angry and very determined.
Well, I did in the beginning, really. I really felt sorry for her, but at the moment, I find it very hard to feel sorry for her because she's put us through a lot of hardship, and she's really ran down our children on paper and on television and everything, you know.
But on the other hand, she is a qualified teacher. She is legally appointed. She's been inspected more than probably any other teacher in the country. The department inspectors have found her to be a good teacher. And yet, because of your actions, you're threatening her livelihood.
Well, we're not disputing the fact that she's not well educated and capable of teaching. But, I mean, obviously there's something wrong when she cannot get it across to the children.
But Marion, we just want to say that it is really for our children we're doing this and not for priests or Father Charles or Father O'Gorman, as she seems to make out, you know. But it's definitely for our children that we are going through all this hardship, as you know, that a lot of the parents are unemployed in recess and they're making a great sacrifice to pay a private teacher, and that is definitely for our children we're doing it.
I think we have different cultural values. I'm sorry to say that. I wish it wasn't so, because then there'd be greater harmony in the place. We wouldn't have such trouble over teaching the Irish in the past. The problem that arose in 1982 came about because of a different sense of values. That was that they wanted to put a stop to teaching the Irish in the school. And that was basically a different sense of values. If you try to stop teaching through the medium of Irish, where I am, you are saying really that you don't want the children to have the language, to have mastery of the language, because it's obvious that children leaving the national schools in this country, apart from the Scoilne Law and Gaeilge and Scoilne na Gaeltachta, the ordinary national school, Tipperary, Leitrim and throughout the country, the children can't communicate in Irish. They can't even answer simple questions in Irish when they're leaving school at the age of 11 or 12, having finished in sixth class. And that's what will happen in recess if the children were taught Irish as a separate subject only. They'd be leaving school without command of the language.
If it's all the question of money, they'll love the Irish, but it's a question of breech teaching it, I don't know, something else.
I'm living alone in Connemara, and I lived alone in Dublin while I was studying in Dublin. I thought it was important to have a quiet house while doing a university course, a degree course. You needed a lot of time to study. And yes, it so happened, and I was happy like that, quite happy, and happy in the present situation as well. But I have a lot of contact with people, and I like to have friends and set out to have friends and keep friends that I have. I think friendship is very important in life. Indeed, companionship is very important in life. The friends that I have and have known are very precious to me. I may say they have adorned my life. I value them greatly, and I like to have contact with them. And with my own family, I like to come home a lot, and I spend a lot of my holidays at home, summer holidays and Christmas and Easter and so on. I like to have contact with the 10 acres where I was reared, with the land, the lie of the land, and the family. And there are young children now in my brother's house, and I like to be with them and, in some way, part of family life for a short time. Really, I was happy single, and I am, but I never drew a circle about life and said, it must be this way, and it's within this circle I'm going to live it, and I must have this, this, and this. I just think life is far too vast and too great for that to confine to any type of circle, and I leave it wide open, and I just take it as it comes and accept it as I accept the weather. And try to find happiness. And I would like to think, married or single, I was thawn thaw beijar on. I always say that about it, that just leave it open, let on thaw beijar be on. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. Depends. Everything depends on who you meet in life anyway. That I would like at all times, whether married or single, not to be aloof from the rest of mankind.
It's terribly difficult. It's extremely difficult to resolve this situation now. I think it would take an enormous community effort, and the community do feel somewhat beleaguered, and they feel set upon, I think, by the press and by different people because of the stand they've taken. I think it will take an enormous effort by the community itself and tremendous leadership from people like the board of management, the school manager, the Archbishop, to even arrive at a situation where you will see the end of the dispute in sight. And you have to always remember as well that one of the really very, very big problems, quite apart from that, for recess, is that the number of pupils are actually dropping anyhow, and that the population is dropping, as it is in many rural West of Ireland parishes. And I think you have that problem juxtaposed with the other dispute in the school.
Well, I think that the parents, you see, the whole thing has had an effect on the community. It has created a certain amount of tension within the community. It has caused an awful lot of anxiety to people. It has put recess in the spotlight, in the glare of publicity. It has caused resentment, certainly, among the parents against sections of the media, because they feel that sections of the media are interested not so much in a solution as in a saga. that they're more interested in the saga than in the solution. I was only interested in looking towards the future and, as I say, in finding out if any of them would be prepared to consider sending their children to Breagin Iguana. That would break the deadlock, that would break the boycott, it would be movement, it would make for unity and reconciliation and peace. And although they were very gracious, as I say, and very courteous, they seemed to me to be united and adamant in their determination not to do that.
The day is long and it's very lonely, and I've gone through two winters of it. Now, when I set out in the morning at about 8:30 for school, there are very few of the farmers in the Bunnagnock area up and out at cattle in the lashing rain, because it's usually raining there. They're seldom attending to cattle so early in the morning. Now, the area is very sparsely populated, and most of the children that I teach go home to houses and families where they don't see any other children, only their own family, until they arrive in school again. And so when I leave here in the evening in winter, it's usually dark by the time I set out for home and travel along the road uphill to Bunnagnock, and the people have gone in again in the winter in November and December. Their work day is over at the time that I arrive there. So that it's a very lonely life. It's an isolated position. The reason I don't find this demoralising is that I'm upholding justice, and I think it takes a good person to defend justice and people's rights. And I think all the teachers of the country owe a lot to me, because they could tomorrow be in the very same position. They could be recessed. I have been recessed. That is to say, I have been pushed aside, and in the first place, a non-official person, a non-official teacher, was put in my place, against all rules and regulations of the Department of Education. Later on, an official teacher was put into my place. I have been recessed. Now, any other teacher in Ireland can become recessed as well. The same thing can happen. They're all in jeopardy. They're all in danger. They can, for no reason at all. No reason need to be given. Or a reason may be stated. The children can be withdrawn from school at any time. And if the parents in recess succeed in driving me out of this school, other teachers can be driven out of their schools.
I would like to see it resolved. I'd like to do my best to contribute towards a resolution. I don't know exactly. I'd have to take that as it comes. Obviously, I have to try and work with the other interests involved, with the INTO, with the department, with the parents, with the teachers, to try and find a resolution. It won't be easy. It won't be easy. I'm not all that hopeful that we can find a solution in the short term. Maybe we can. We have to continue to live in hope. I think it will be more long term than anything else. That's my feeling now. But perhaps I've been unduly pessimistic.
School was a happy place, as long as you worked and as long as you did what was expected of you and was fair. So it struck me in school, I think it was a day we were doing an English poem, the teacher was doing a poem with us, that I felt, well, if I were out there in the teacher's place, I wonder would I be able to get this across in a way that the children would enjoy it. Wouldn't it be nice to be doing that and to have worked like this going through poetry? I loved poetry, always did and still do. I think it was the day, I remember learning the poem, I Will Go With My Father A Ploughing to the green fields by the sea, and the rooks and the gulls and the seagulls will come flocking after. I will sing to the patient horses with the lark in the clear of the air, and my father will sing the plough song, blesses the cleaving share. Now, I had been with my father around about on the land, and he was always singing in those days, and he ploughed a bit too. There was more tillage done in the part of Mayo that I grew up in than is done at present in Connemara, where I live. And the little bit of ploughing on the small farm and the turning of the sod in spring was lovely, out with the horses. And that poem meant an awful lot to me. And I just thought it was grand to be doing something in class for one's work that was so enjoyable, that had been part of your experience. But it wasn't for that or for what money I could get out of it that brought me into teaching. It was what influence I could have on people's minds and the enjoyment that I could get out of character training, really, and academic work in school with children and transmitting to them things of cultural value.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.